Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. Why fat? Because we want you to jam as much as you can into your expat adventure. Fill it up to the brim. Today we're talking about when you love your expat location, like really, really love it, and the expat experience, but your child or maybe children just hate it. We're going to talk to two fabulous expat women who are very happy in their location but are going through the angst of knowing that their kids aren't. We're going to discuss what they're doing about it, and in some cases it's quite drastic. We've also got loads of TV, podcasts and social media recommendations for you this week. So shall we just get cracking? While I'm in Doha, my fabulous serial expat co-host Nikki Moffat is in Hamburg, Germany. Let's go find her and say hi. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm a little bit chilly, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
Why are you a little bit chilly?
I'm a little bit chilly because it's -5 degrees Celsius today.
Oh, you didn't say jelly. You said chilly.
Oh, I said my non-South Australian accent.
Because I think jelly has really become a word in Australia for jealous, hasn't it?
Because yes, it has.
We do like to shorten everything. Chrissy, yes. Bicky. Yes. So you're a bit chilly. Did you say -5?
-5 degrees Celsius. Ooh. That's what it is.
Oh, I think Aberdeen woke up to snow yesterday as well, someone told me.
Yes. So we had snow. Yes, we woke up to snow yesterday morning, which is super exciting for Australians.
Yes. This is possibly a dumb and insulting question to the entire population of Germany, but do you go skiing in Germany?
I don't know. I believe there are mountains in the south. As right. I've said before, it's very flat here, so there's no mountains here. But Germans are very avid skiers. And I do know there is, but a lot of people talk about going skiing in other countries, but I don't know. So I will investigate it and I'll let you know.
Thank you.
When I have more information.
Okay, so the big news today, and I'm always aware of this when we do this on a podcast, because there will be people that are listening to this podcast in 2 years' time and it will mean nothing and it'll be oh so contraire of old news. But
today is November 9th, 2016, the day that Donald Trump became president of the United States.
I'm still quite numb, I think, about it all. Do you know, like I will.
I'm so torn. I'm torn between I told you so and...
I have to say I have felt the smugness from you, Nikki, in your Facebook updates and your need to tell us all that you told us so.
Well, I don't look, you know, it's not, if I was American and voting, it's not the outcome I would have been looking for. But I just felt when I was living there, I just felt a feeling, a vibe, especially post-Brexit. And I went home to Australia in July and lots of people wanted to talk about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton because that was a very big topic. And I talked to a lot of people and I told them, I said, look, you know, I think it's a possibility. It could very well happen. And Sam, my husband's sitting there saying, no, it's going to be the biggest loss in Republican history. They're going to have to start the party again. And I just said, I think you're wrong. And so I'm actually torn because my father is a very big Republican supporter and he rang me at 5:45 this morning, but which is fine because I was awake since 3 watching. And he said, you're the first one that ever told me it could have happened. I said, thanks.
And you did. You've been saying that all along. And I remember talking to you over the summer and I think I might have even said, oh, yeah, but you're in Atlanta. You know, that's
true. I was in the South and I was listening to a something about it this morning and I heard a girl who was talking on an Australian podcast and she said, look, you know, California and New York are not America. There's so much more of America that's in the middle. Mm. And a lot of us get our news and our views and our opinions from kind of those two places. And that's just not really necessarily what's going on. That's not to say there's huge support for Hillary Clinton being the first female president, all that kind of stuff. There's huge movements going on for that. And I think it turns out she might win the popular vote but still not win the Electoral College, which is how it works out. But it just, anyway, it is what it is. But that's today, and I think we couldn't have started the podcast without just recognising that today is that day.
Now, the good news in all of this, because I have good news and you have good news. Good news, because obviously I've just spent my past year working at the Barefoot Investor, so I see everything now as in what happens to the share market. Yes. And the good news is the share market has basically collapsed. And if you do have any cash at the moment as an expat, this is the time to buy those lovely, solid, reliable shares that, as Buffett would say, dropped in price but not dropped in value. So, I mean, it's a great time to go and do something like that. But your good news was far more beautiful.
Oh, yes. Well, yes. I just said you choose your news. So I'm choosing this on to be my good news on this good news day. So it's an expat story. So I have friends who were living in Bangladesh, but who we knew from Australia. And while they were living in Bangladesh, their daughter was diagnosed with leukemia. And the company moved them to Singapore during that time, transition period, for her to get help and to start being her treatment. And then after they moved to Australia. But that was it was 7 years ago, because today I saw photos on Facebook of her ringing the bell at Westmead Children's Hospital. So she's finished her 5 years of aftercare treatment.
Yeah.
And she rang the bell on her way out of the hospital. So that was just like so wonderful to see that, and just so lovely.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is really good news. I like those stories. Okay, so today we are talking about when you love it but the kids hate it. I guess it came from, I went for dinner with someone and they told me that exact thing, that they loved where they were living and their children absolutely despised it, and it was causing all sorts of grief within their family. And I just wondered how often that happens and what happens, and if we could perhaps do a podcast where we spoke to a couple of people there that had happened and how they'd sort of handled it. I kicked off by speaking to Liz, who's in Hong Kong. Now, Liz's husband is what our friend Anne-Marie Slaughter would call the lead parent. I do like that phrase, the lead.
Yes.
Parent. So, Nikki, you're the lead parent and I'm the lead parent. That Liz's husband is the lead parent. She had, her story kind of began, this is just a little bit of back history, she was working in Adelaide for a global company but very much working in the Adelaide office. But she works in HR for this company, and she had to travel to Hong Kong here and there for work. Her and her husband sort of often joked about her maybe getting a job overseas, like how amazing would it be if on one of those trips they actually offered her a chance to stay and be an expat. But what she wasn't aware of, and she was telling me when we were sort of in the pre-interview stage, was that in her company's eyes, because she was a woman and a mother, they had always just assumed that she wouldn't want to move if she was asked.
Yes. So wrong.
Isn't it?
So wrong.
And it was only when a couple of very senior people left within the organisation that it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, well, let's ask Liz. Maybe she will go. And she, of course, jumped at the chance. Her and her husband were very keen to move. Now, the job she's gone to is an amazing job. Like, and I'm not going to out her for who she works for and what she does for a living, but it's one of those sort of fantastic global jobs that you just can't do from your hometown. It involves sort of making very big decisions and having these enormous sort of global get-togethers where you'll get 2,000 partners in the one room at the same time, and sort of dealing with some big things that are happening at a global level. So it is this dream job that she has managed to score. So imagine you get to Hong Kong, you are working in your dream job, your husband eventually finds a job of his own sort of 6 months down the track, and you're there with your 10 and your 13-year-old, and they just say, I don't want to be here. I hate it. We want to go home. So I figured I will play the interview with Liz and you can have a listen. But I started off by asking her about the assumptions her and her husband had made about the move and how it went from there.
I just made the assumption that it would be actually quite easy for them, being children. You know, everyone, the perception is children adapt, and but perhaps that certainly wasn't the case once we got here.
Do you think, Liz, that if you'd moved them when they were younger, so maybe if they were 8 and 5, would the situation have been different?
I do believe so. And I look around Hong Kong, there's a couple of things that struck me. First of all, it was really easy to get my kids into school here, and that's really unusual. And that's because they were, by expat standards in Hong Kong, they were at the upper end. You know, most of the children are in that sort of 2 to 7 year bracket, and there's a lot of pregnant women who are, you know, on their expat journey and having their sort of second, third, fourth child, which I'm sure you relate to.
I know with little children you can say things like, well, we'll have a swimming pool in the backyard in Houston, and they'll go yay, happy. But with bigger children, they're not as easily sold.
Not at all.
So what were some of the selling points that you gave to Hong Kong?
My older daughter, she was studying Chinese at the time at school and had been for about 4 years, and so we said, look, this will be a fantastic opportunity for you to, you know, expand your Mandarin, and also my children had travelled a fair bit, and you know, the key selling point for us is about the travel that we could do being based in Hong Kong, which they kind of liked to a degree, but they were a bit like, well, we do that now in Australia, so you know. My son was more difficult because he is very into his sport. And as you know, Australia is a very sporting-based culture and has wonderful facilities and, you know, an open space. And so for him, and when we did brought him here for his first trip, we actually took the first place. He loves cricket. We took him to the cricket club. Fortunately, Hong Kong has a good cricket community because it's of its British heritage. But, you know, for example, they're not playing on grounds. They're playing on soccer pitches or on the top of a water storage container facility, which has grass on the top of it. So, you know, you really have to make compromises. And he's a little bit like, well, you know, it's not the same, but, you know, we try and sell it as best we can. And it has taken us a while to get him connected into the sport that he likes to do. It's not it's not like you just turn up and you know where to go. It takes a while. And he loves basketball. It took us 18 months to find the competition and the team to get him into. So
tell me, what ended up happening with your eldest?
So the year that my daughter was 14, she spent the year in Hong Kong, so the first year with us, and she really loves Hong Kong, but she didn't settle into the education system here. She really struggled with the transition to a new school. She'd got been in a girls' school. She moved to a co-ed school. I think that transition was also a bit painful for her, and it just didn't go to plan. And the way she responded to it was she really retreated into herself, and she spent a fair bit of the year, actually most of the year, just sitting in her room. And I could see her just, you know, going into her shell. And she was, you know, she's not a sporty person at all, but she's has some real strengths. She's very good at, she's a great debater. You know, she likes politics. And so she was actually being strongly encouraged by her school to get involved in the debating team. She'd been in a debate with one of the top debaters. She'd won that debate. They said, please, please, please come on our debating team. She didn't want a bar of it. So she really withdrew. And in the end, toward the end of the year, we made the decision that we sent her back to boarding school in her hometown in Australia. She's adapted quite well. But it has still been ups and downs. She tells me that she would rather be in the boarding school than up here with us. So she's quite clear about that. My son's a completely different child, as I've mentioned, and he's really struggled with the journey. And what's been really interesting for him is he's struggled with something I never thought he would, and that's making friends. I always perceived him to be a much more capable and more extroverted person than what this experience has shown him to be. And I think it comes from that fact I mentioned earlier that he's had the same friends since he was a tiny tot. They've grown up together, and he never had to make friends. And so he never really had to do it in a big way. And he's now come here without any social support and it's a friendship group. And it's taken him probably about 18 months to really to find a group, but I've also observed that he's not a child who puts himself out there. He doesn't give a lot of himself, and you would know that as an expat or when you're moving to a new country, it doesn't matter whether you're a child or an adult, if you don't give of yourself, it's very hard to establish a network. The sport has helped a lot, you know, because that what that does is that keeps him busy. He's so scheduled in terms of sport, and he loves that. He's got, you know, basketball and touch footy and cricket and soccer. You know, he's here and there doing everything. So that keeps him busy and occupied, so he doesn't get to, you know, dwell on anything too much.
What are the decisions that you have to make in the next couple of years?
Yeah, it's hard because my nature is to be a planner. My husband and I are in different places because he just loves Hong Kong. He's adapted to it so well, and I do as well, but he's a lot more... I worry a lot more about the kids than he does. Yes. I don't know whether that's normal or it's just our relationship, but he's like, oh, they'll work it out. Don't worry. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I look at the, you know, some of the more, you know, the details of the day and say, no, this isn't going to work for our family. But 2018 will be the final year of school for my daughter. You know, that does sometimes, it's a significant year, and I get that mother guilt feeling that, what if I'm not there to offer that, you know, on the ground support that a mother should? And now my husband would never feel that way. You know,
no.
He would never. Men just do not feel that. They're just like, you know, he'll literally think like, well, my mum and dad never really even asked me how I went through year 12. Why are you worrying? Why is this a 2016 problem, you know, that we've created for ourselves?
And do you think if you were to ask your son now, like, do you want to stay in Hong Kong or would you like to go home, what would his answer be?
Go home. However, he's a good-spirited kid and he'll say, but mum, if you really need to be here, I understand. He will say that in the next breath.
Do you know, I was speaking to someone in Singapore who had the same situation with their kids, and she said something really interesting, was that their child did it to them in three different locations. And she said, we just suddenly realised that he was a grass is greener on the other side kind of guy. And
that's really funny to say that, because my husband runs that argument with me. He says, what's to say... We get back to Adelaide, we'd make all these changes, and you and I, all we're doing is regretting it. And he's still, he actually, when he gets back, it's not going to be the same. And he'll actually experience a lot of the same things that he is in this location. So, yes. And it's a fair argument. Yeah. It's just, you don't have a crystal ball.
The whole thing about the child retreating and spending time in her room, her daughter, sorry, not the child, but her daughter actually doing that and kind of disconnecting, that's so, like, if you're working full time, you've got this big job and you're doing all that, like, and being able to notice that as well, that's kind of, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you wouldn't, you're a mother, but it's just that she's got all this new stuff going on, and I just wonder, you know, whether another parent would notice the same thing. I thought that was just kind of a good...
Yeah, she's a great parent. She's a great parent. And her concern, like her constant concern.
But that she's happy in boarding school is fantastic, because I think everybody should be happy in boarding school. I loved boarding school.
You did love boarding school, didn't you?
I loved it. I know it's not for everybody, but I've been heavily suggesting it to my daughter lately.
Yeah.
And I thought it was also interesting about that her son never had to make friends before, so that he had the same friends from when he was very small. And I think that brings up that it's hard for all kids regardless. So we talk about when our kids move and they have to make new friends, how it's difficult, but it's kind of always difficult.
I thought what was fascinating about that was that she had always assumed that her son was this really gregarious, outgoing kid.
Yeah.
But, of course, he'd lived in this little bubble where everyone knew everyone. And it wasn't until they kind of took him out of that bubble and placed him somewhere else that it was, oh, you're not like that at all. You were just like that because you were very comfortable in your surrounds.
And it may be that he is like that. So maybe if they moved to another country, he would be totally fine because he's done it once.
Yes.
But it's the expectation that you have to do it.
Yes.
You know, it's understanding that – And I think that when you move as a parent, you do understand more about your children when you move to different countries more than once.
Yes.
Because different, and do you understand more about yourself at the same time, but different situations need different approaches, and, you know, kids have to do that too, and they're so much more or less world-wise or experienced, and sometimes they just get it right, bang, off they go, because they don't have any kind of concerns about doing it wrong, like adults tend to have a little bit more.
Yes.
I thought that was kind of interesting that he had always been in this environment and now he wasn't. But oh, I liked your grass is greener. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And because here's my thing with kids at the moment, because I had a bit of a revelation last night. My son came in, I was in the bath watching Graham Norton, as I do like to do after I've been for a walk at night. So I was in the bath and little Henry Hot Dog comes in and he has discovered a book from grade 4 or grade 3. He had the same teacher in grade 3 and grade 4 where they did this thing where you were student of the week. And when you're student of the week, you get the whole week's all about you. And every day you bring in a different thing. And at the end of the week, everybody in the class writes a really lovely note to you. But also your parents write a note about you that gets read out in class. And yeah. When Henry was in grade 3 or grade 4, I did it. And I can remember for his, I did. And I just sort of did it before school, but I guess this is the benefit of having a mother who writes, is that I wrote Henry Bruce all sort of in down one line. I've just realised I've completely outed my full name for my children, but sorry, this is just for the podcast people. And
that's not many. That's yes. Just a few.
So I'd done H is for this and E is for this and N is for this, and they were all these, you know, beautiful mum kind of things about him that he likes to do and what makes him him, and, you know, Y is for youngest because that's what you'll always be in our family and blah 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 blah. And anyway, I remember when I did it, Henry was horrified because I'd put it in the envelope. And the teacher, well, he came to me and told me that was stupid, Mum. You weren't meant to do it like that. Nobody else's mum did it like that. It was so embarrassing and, you know, didn't like it. And anyway, so here we go, either a year or 2 years later, because I can't remember if it was grade 3 or grade 4. But he walks into the bathroom. He's got the little folder of the, you know, student week. And he says, Mum, can I read something to you? And I said, sure. Anyway, he reads this thing out to me perfectly that I've written. I'd completely forgotten that I'd written it, which is another reason why it's so important that we write these things down. But I'd written, and there was stuff there too about stuff he was doing right then. Like he used to make me a cup of coffee every morning. And so that was... He's given that up. Anyway, but he read it out. The look on his face, Nikki, as he read this out was just, he was so proud and so full of love. And at the end of it, he goes, Mum, how long did it take you to write that? That's amazing what you wrote. I love this, you know. Can we put this in my special box and keep this? Like, he was so enamoured with it. And I think that, to
me... this is what I would say, and do you remember how you felt to me and how you didn't like it and how you said none of the other mothers did that?
I may have given that a mention. And he was kind of confused about why he would have done that. Do you know, like I said, oh, you gave me such a hard time when I wrote it. And he said, oh, I think that was because you said my middle name and I didn't want anyone to know or something. But he didn't, you know, it was gone. He just absolutely loved it. And so I think with our kids, I guess the very long-winded point I'm trying to make is quite often when we're asking our 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds how they feel about something or what they think, we have to remember that we're the adult and that, yes, you know, sometimes their mind will change from 6 months to 12 months. And sure, don't discredit that someone's unhappy or not liking where they are, but it's like that whole thing when someone comes home from school and they just cannot stand Susie in the corner, and then next week you're dropping them off at Susie in the corner's house for a sleepover. I am a big believer of just be a bit careful of the grass being greener on the other side.
So that grass is greener comes up with my conversation with Lyndall, and I asked her, you know, are your kids really sure? So Lyndall is a two-time expat to the same location, and her kids didn't love it the first time, but they were prepared to go back. And then it kind of went a bit wrong. So,
and how old are Lyndall's kids?
Lyndall's kids, her daughter is 13 and her son is 11.
Okay, let's have a listen.
This is our second stint in Singapore. So we did 2 years, 2011 and 12. Then we moved back to Melbourne for 2 years, and then we got the opportunity to return to Singapore. And originally they were on board with it. They were really excited. They were going to be able to go to a different school. And it was all going well, and we thought we'd be here for 4 or 5 years, or possibly until my almost 13-year-old daughter finishes school. And then we went home for Christmas last year, and that sort of was the catalyst for them saying, you know what, we don't want to live in Singapore anymore, we want to move back to Melbourne. And that was like, oh my God, there go our plans, you know. And my husband and I are quite happy living in Singapore. I mean, he travels a lot, as most expats yep. do, I guess. And with helpers and whatnot, it kind of makes life a lot easier. So that really threw a spanner in the works. And so it's, we've sort of spent this year organising a move home because they really turned around and said, no, we're done, we're over it.
And they're completely 100% sure?
Yes, yes, they are, absolutely. And we have tried, don't get me wrong, we've tried to sort of push it out a little bit and, you know, say, you know, another year or another, no, no, they just shut us down completely. And so we sort of figure it, at the end of the day, it's not always about what we want. We've got to try and make them happy. And they're very family orientated too, and I think that's a big pull to return home. And my daughter's quite resistant to change. So for her to come back here, it was that she was probably the biggest challenge. And I don't know that she's given it her all, but, you know, she saw that glimmer of hope and she just lunged for it and said, I want to go home. So that was it.
So are they at the same school now that they're at the first time you're in Singapore?
They're at a different school. So they're currently at an Australian school. The first time we were here, I couldn't actually get a place for my daughter, so they went to a British school. And I think that could have been one of the problems in getting them to settle. So moving back home for them at that point in time was very exciting. And then when the opportunity arose to come back, they sort of were, they were okay about it, but as long as they went to the Australian school. So that was sort of one of the points that we had to make happen.
Okay, so that happened and then they came back and they were happy to be back, mm-hmm. or they were still kind of transitioning when you went home. How long was it between when you arrived back and when you went home for Christmas?
It was a year. And so we thought everything was fine. We were just cruising along and enjoying life, and then we went home and that's when it all changed. So
you're leaving then at the end of this year in December?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Okay. How are you and your husband feeling about that now?
My husband actually has to stay for contractual reasons. So he's going to stay for another year. I have my moments. I've got a good group of local friends here that really have shown me sort of local life, I guess. And I'm going to miss them terribly, and that's going to be hard. But then on the flip side, there's a part of me that is sort of longing for home and open spaces and not having people living above me or below me or, you know, and having that sort of fresh food and, you know, the things that you used to at home. So I'm sort of caught between two worlds at the moment.
And it's quite difficult because you did a 2 year and then 2 year and then flipped. So it's a lot of change. I mean, you would really say Were you really settled in the first 2 years because you knew you were going back at the end of the second year?
It was actually, we weren't expecting to go back at that time. The company my husband was with asked him to move back to Melbourne. So that was a shock. So, and by that stage, I had really settled into life in Singapore, and I was devastated to be moving back home, to be honest. So to get the opportunity to return, I thought all my Christmases had come at once. Yeah. I was just like, yay. And because I love the weather here, I know most people will go, what?
No, but, I'm with you.
Yeah. I really enjoy it. And so the thought of having to endure a Melbourne winter is a bit scary. But anyway, so.
And what do people say to you when you say we're moving home because the kids don't like it here?
They kind of, they're okay about it, actually. They're just like, oh, that's fair enough. And they don't actually, they're not surprised is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, they're quite, okay. And I think because the ones that know my children well sort of understand the pull that they have to go home.
Now you guys have made the decision, you've discussed it and you are moving back. How are the kids feeling? So are they feeling reassured? And they're comfortable and confident and they're enjoying the rest of their time, or they're just still unhappy?
Yeah. No, they're actually counting. They're on the countdown. they really are. And but saying that, they haven't they're still enjoying catching up with their friends and school and that. And I don't know, it was the fact that they hated living here. I think it was just more that they wanted to be home. Probably at the end of the day, if we really had to stay, we could have, but our view is that we want to try and make them happy and keep them stable, and I think at the time this was the best choice for them.
And do you think when they're finished school and they're settled, they're living by themselves, would you consider moving overseas again?
Oh, without a doubt. Yep. Absolutely. I said to my husband, I don't believe this is the end of being an expat for us. I think we'll do it. But once the kids are like you said, looking after themselves and a bit more independent. So probably once they're in uni or something like that, we'll head off again. Because I like the thought of living overseas. I like experiencing different places, different cultures. It's a real eye-opener. It's a great experience. Yeah, and I think for kids it's a good experience too, although they might not see it at the time. I think, you know, when they become older, they'll really appreciate the experience being overseas.
I thought with Lyndall it was really interesting that it was when her kids went home for Christmas that their minds changed. Because do you have this? We have this, where you go somewhere on the holiday and it's all beaches and no school and ice creams and whatever you want to eat and family and relatives and fun. Mum and dad are in such good mood all the time, and then we want to live in Australia. It's so much better in Australia. And when you sit there and go, yeah, but you do realise that if we were in Australia, this and this and this and this and this and this and this would happen.
Because I just say there's school in Australia. People, there's schools in Australia. I tell them all the time.
And I'm not saying that's what's happening with Lyndall, because her kids have obviously already been to school in Australia and they know that reality. But I just think that is something to be really mindful of before you go on holidays. I think, you know, the longer I'm an expat with kids, the more I think there is a definite preparation that has to be had and conversations that have to be had. Like when you were just saying before about speaking to Willow about boarding school, that's not crazy in a way that you want to keep that conversation in the background just in case you do have to use it one day.
Like, I know.
You know, boarding school is not a decision that you make over the summer. And I've had a lot of people who've said to me, who've written to me and said, oh, you know, we decided over the summer that our child was going to go to boarding school and he hates it or she hates it. And it's like, well, yeah, that's tough. That's tough to get your head around that in a few months. You know, it needs to be a conversation that happens for years. But I just think, yeah, maybe we do need to prepare our kids really, really well for things. But did you think too that it was interesting that Lyndall hasn't given up on her expat days being over as well? And I wonder, is that also a reason why they're okay with packing it in and going home, because they think, oh, well, we can do this again? Whereas I think a lot of expats, the thing that would stop them from packing it in and going home is because, well, they don't know when they'll ever get that chance again.
Yeah, I agree with that. So that's would be the thing that would stop me right this second. The whole, they're just being open to it. And I guess because she's been home and then gone again, she sees that that's a possibility. Whereas I just think it looks like such an overwhelming hurdle that I'd be like, oh, throw my hands in the air.
Yeah, you know? And I guess I have always thought if I went home, it'd be going home for good. I've never thought of it as, oh, we'd get home and then one of us would have this amazing job opportunity overseas again. I've just never thought of it like that. I think it's such a huge thing to get that job overseas in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with that. And another thing that was quite interesting is that when they go home, they're actually moving to different school, different house, different area of what they've lived before. So she said, we're really taking on a change. And also her husband's going to be still away. So it's really going to be quite a tough change again.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, because I guess it's the same as Liz said in her first thing, is they're not sure whether if they went home, their son having to go to a different school, different life, whether they would have the same hurdle all over again. And, yeah, that's right. They're not, her kids aren't going back to somewhere familiar. But I guess they know that they want that sunshine, fresh food lifestyle.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that. But I'm so interested in that because I hear what she's saying about she's decided that now it needs to be about the kids. But when my kids say no, they don't want to move or they don't like something, I just keep working at them.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And that doesn't mean I discount their point of view or their opinion. But I think as the adult, as you said, someone has to be the adult, and I'm the adult, and I just know for them, you know. But if I thought my child was really, really struggling, but again, I don't have somewhere to go back to.
Yeah.
So they were at home and left and went home again and left again, whereas my kids don't have a kind of home base.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had the conversation at your house, but definitely at mine, when we've seen, you know, mum and the kids go home, inverted commas, while dad has stayed, or vice versa. My husband has always made it very, very clear that that is not an option for us, like very, very clear. So he has actually said out loud, this is what I do not want to happen. I do not want you and the kids to go and me to stay. That is not the message I want to give the kids. And one of his philosophies on that is that our marriage is number one important thing and our family then comes. But sort of what message are we giving the kids? And I get what he means, because this happens a lot in the country now as well, with, you know, in the olden days, kids would go off to school and maybe go to boarding school if you were in a remote sort of location. And now, because of the price of boarding school, a lot of rural families have realised that it's cheaper for mum to go and either buy a house or rent a house, you know, and her be there with the kids. And there are marriages kind of falling by the wayside because of it, because, you know, you can imagine the incredible strain on a marriage if you separate mum and dad and, you know, try and do all of that. So I think you're right in that every family is different and every family does what's right for them. But I think said to Greg, hey, you stay here, I'm going to go here, we'll catch up. It would just be like, oh, no. Yeah.
But then you have to remember there are also some locations where, you know, it's deemed a little bit too dangerous or whatever for the whole family to go. So in some of those situations, families make the decision that father, one parent will stay and one parent will go with the children, etc. So particularly consular positions and things like that. So, I mean, it, as you said, each family has to make its own decisions about what's best for it at any given time. And this is what Lyndall's decided and this is what Liz has decided.
Yeah, and the whole thing, and I want to be really clear that I am not by any means judging either anyone's decision because nobody knows the backstory. Do you know, and I think so often it comes down to, well, we desperately need this job for the money, or we desperately need this job for the career, or you don't know just how unhappy my child is right now and what the conversation is behind closed doors. And it all, you know, factors in at different degrees. Yeah, you can only sort of do what you can do, can't you? I think it is that positive outlook, hanging in there. I thought it was really interesting that Liz sort of said how much sport helped with her son. And I think that is a big one. I know that when we came to Qatar, I wish we would have got the kids involved in more sports faster than we did. Because I think sport just is the great leveler for all kids.
It is good if you're if your kid's into sport. I mean, it's difficult. And it's not.
And like she said, her daughter wasn't. But yes. I also think of my gorgeous, beautiful friend Erica, who was 13 when her parents moved her to Austria. It was either Austria or Germany. And she did exactly that, locked herself in the room, cried, screamed at her parents, told them they were awful, awful people. And she said 3 years later she did the same when they told her it was time to leave.
Yeah, that's right. And there was no sort of Snapchat or Twitter or Instagram for her to communicate with her old friends to see that the world was still turning. So in a way, so when we talked about social media, we talked about it helping kids moving because knowing you can stay in contact with your old friends.
But also but hindering.
That can be also difficult.
And I think I said at the time, I remember my daughter Lizzie stayed off of Snapchat and Instagram until she had found some new friends of her own because she said she didn't want her friends to worry about her. But I also think she wanted to make sure she created this new life as well. No matter what, we all know, we've all moved. Moving is really difficult and really hard. It's hard for all of us, whether you're an adult or a kid. But also you can't deny the sense of accomplishment that comes when you have created that new life. That will, it might take 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. But once you create that new life, you then have the benefit of all the wonderful things that come with that, new friends, new experiences, a bigger picture of the world. And unfortunately, I think it just takes time.
Yeah, it was quite funny. Last night my daughter had some homework and one of them was to ask your parents about moving. And so you had to list all the places you'd lived. So I started, she goes, where were you born? And that's the first question, where were you born? And then it says, where did you move? And then I'm giving her everything. She's like, this is too many places. I can't fit them all in. It's like, okay, let's just jump to. I said, and then Germany, she goes, I'm going to write that was 1993 because I don't want them to think it's this time that you lived here. I was like, okay. And then she got to, what do you like about moving? And so I said, well, what do you like about moving? She said, this is not about me, this is about you. So I listed some things I liked about moving. And then she said,
what do you like about moving?
Well, I said learning about languages and cultures and sort of living in an environment that you might have read about or, you know, watched a TV show about. I said meeting new people, making new friends, traveling to new places, you know, all the regular things, eating new food. She's like, yeah, good point. I like that. And then moving what you don't like, you know, not necessarily being able to speak the language or be understood when you're trying to get around. And, you know, having a period where you have to make friends and sometimes that can be daunting.
Yeah,
I was kind of trying to put that through for her because I don't for the adjustment period. So, you know, but it was just very interesting. She's like, "That's too many places." I said, "You know, when you're older and you sit down with your child, I said your list will be just as long."
Yes,
yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. But see, I think if I had to sit down with my children and talked about where I moved, you know, 0 to 14, zip. My kids would say, oh my God, you had it so easy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we should move on.
Okay, well, I want everyone to know that I went on to iTunes this week just to see if anybody was like leaving us a message like we ask every week, please give us a review on iTunes. And I found one from October 19th, so I'm very sorry that I hadn't seen it earlier.
Oh, wow. And who was it?
It was iMac04, that's all I know. So iMac04, thank you for loving us. And it said that she or he loves it, that I repatriated back to my home country 12 years ago. Gasp, has it really been that long? And this lovely witty podcast hits the nail on the head. It was on what it was like living overseas. I love listening and remembering all the good times and the challenging times. It's like sitting in the kitchen having a cup of tea and chatting. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Oh, that's nice. And yes, we desperately need a few new reviews. I know that it's a complete pain in the bum, and I know why people don't do it, because I don't do it. Do you know, I listen to lots of podcasts and I very rarely think to actually go onto iTunes and leave a review. But please, people, if you could leave one, it helps us so much with like getting us back into the, you know, on the board for iTunes.
On the charts.
On the charts.
On the charts.
So let's talk social media. What are you watching at the moment, Nikki?
Well, I was watching a lot of the US election. So we're going to move on. Well,
thank God
from
that's
that
over.
Now.
Yes.
But I have also been watching The Masters of Sex.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And I had totally forgotten about it. And then I was just scrolling through my Hulu and I went, oh, there's a new season. So I've just
Oh, I didn't know there was a new season. I only watched the last season. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to add that to my list
of watching. Well, I don't know. It depends where you got up to. But I just watched a season that was new to me. So right. I can't remember when I stopped watching it. But I just watched the whole thing in like a few days because I just love it. I just think it's so clever and I love the whole story around it.
Yeah.
I think
it's
a good one.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you watching?
I haven't watched any series. I'm going to watch The Crown because I'm quite keen to see that. That's the one about the Queen and Prince Philip. And I will admit that the reason why I want to see it is what I have been watching is The Graham Norton Show. That's my regular hop in the bath and watch The Graham Norton Show. But they had the actor and actress on The Graham Norton Show talking about The Crown just coming out now on Netflix. Have you seen any of the previews for it?
I have not. I didn't know it was about the Now I have to go and see.
There's a few things I've got on my list of things I want to watch this week. And one is I want to watch Leonardo DiCaprio's After the Flood. Yeah, the documentary After the Flood. So the kids and I are going to watch that on the weekend. And I also want to watch Planet Earth Part 2. Which is, of course, the infamous iguana and snakes video that everybody's been
watching. Which we were hoping this week was going to be about the iguana and snakes, but no.
That was amazing. And for people that don't know what I'm talking about, you have to go and have a look. There's, if you hop onto YouTube and look at Planet Earth, Number 2, which is a David Attenborough BBC series, but there's a scene where the baby iguanas are born and God knows why nature does it this way, but the mother lays the eggs in the rocks down below or in the like pebbles down below. Then she, how she does it, I don't even know.
No.
I need to watch the whole thing. But basically the baby iguana hatches and then has to run like the clappers to get up the rocks onto the cliff while it's being chased by what can only be described as some horror story of thousands and maybe millions, I can't, I'm exaggerating, but there's definitely hundreds of snakes. That razor stakes. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, it's quite the experience.
It's just hideous. idiots. And anyway, so cousin Bianca posted it on Facebook, and the kids and I watched it over breakfast, and we were seriously,
we were seriously
screaming out to the iguana, "Run, run!" And the iguana is like, it's up on two legs, and it's just running and running and running and running. And yeah, and there's all snakes, and they just keep coming from everywhere. It's like they just keep coming. It's just amazing piece of television I've seen. So, yes, yeah, so we're going to watch Planet Earth as well, but also The Crown has come out on Netflix, and it is a story of the Queen and Prince Philip's, and it looks cute.
What Netflix do you have?
I have Qatar. I have Qatar Netflix, but in Australia I have Australian Netflix.
Yeah, so your login follows you. So where you belong in a country, it just follows you wherever you go.
Yes.
But it just gives you what's legal in that country.
Yes. But, of course, I would never do this, Nikki, and I'm sure you wouldn't either, because I'm sure it's probably illegal. So I would never tell anyone to do this. But I have heard that there are people that use something called Getflix. Have you heard of this, Nikki?
I have heard of Getflix. Someone was telling me about it the other day. I just can't remember who.
And Kirsty.
I think Getflix, if you were that way inclined, would be amazing, because you could watch whatever you wanted to watch from anywhere. And I have heard that Australians overseas can download Getflix, and then they can watch ABC iView, they can watch 10 Play, they can watch 9 Now, they can basically watch anything that was on Aussie TV the night before. What are you listening to?
Well, so I have been listening to a podcast series by Andrew Denton called Better Off Dead.
This is how we drove to Uluru.
Is it?
Yes, we listened to the entire series.
Oh, my God. I have very strong feelings about it, because this is the anniversary of the week of my mother's passing, and she, you know, was in a lot of pain and for the last few days, and it was very difficult to be there with her. I'm sure it was more difficult for her. But, you know, I at the time developed very strong feelings about it. So I was fascinated to listen to it. And you just like, you swing in roundabouts. So one minute you're saying yes, and the next minute you're saying, good point. And then you're saying, like, I just really, I mean, I'm kind of on board, but I just think the thing at the moment is, to me, is that when you in the Netherlands and Belgium, and I don't know about what about the US so much, but when you make the decision, you kind of do it when you're quite well, and then you do it then.
Yes.
So you're kind of saying, okay, this is it. Whereas I would have preferred if Mum was able to say, like, you know, quite close to the very end, when it really was it and the pain was so bad, like, now would be good. Do you know? Whereas the difference between, you know, the story he tells about the person calling their daughter and saying, you know, you need to come because Dad's having a party, and it's all, you know.
Yeah.
I just – that I get that, and I think that's great to have that control, but I just think – and then you listen to the doctors, and I don't know, I was so confused. Like, did you listen to it all as a family together?
We did. So we hopped in the car to drive to Uluru, which takes, you know, days. We just did podcasts all the way. It was quite funny, because we had three different families listening to three, you know, in three different cars, listening to three very different things. And, you know, our family was the podcast family, while, you know, there may have been others that were listening to country music, and another family that was listening to the top 40. And so Fred, our number three child, who was 12 at the time, became completely transfixed. Fred's like a deep thinker. I think I've talked about that before. And so, I mean, Andrew Denton, for those who do not know, is a great interviewer, and has a history in Australia of just being a kick-ass interviewer with all sorts of fascinating people. But it was his passion, because his father died in a really gruesome, you know, long-winded way, and it has stayed etched in his memory of watching his father die and pleading for someone to end it for him. So it's really become his passion is euthanasia. And so is there, I see you've said there's 17 episodes. Was that really how many there were that we got through?
Yeah, wow. There were 17 episodes because I just found it. I listened to, here I am confessing again to my Australian addiction. I was listening to Mia Friedman did a no filter interview with Andrew Denton.
Okay, yep.
And I had known about the podcast, but I hadn't really, like, it didn't really hit home. And then when she did the interview, I was like, yes, I must go and listen to them now. Yeah. So he's been
talking about this for years. And I think there's another one you could probably listen to that's done through the Wheeler Centre. The Wheeler Centre does great podcasts as well. And I'm pretty sure he's talking about it there, but it really is his thing. And I like you, it was, I think it's a really well balanced podcast because even though you know that he's very pro euthanasia, he does tell you the horror stories. And so you do sit there and go, oh, well, that's not right. You know, maybe that shouldn't happen. We loved it as a family to listen to, thought it was just really interesting. We listened to that on the way there, and on the way back, we listened to season two of Serial. All the way back.
I never got through season two of Serial.
It wasn't as good as season one.
It wasn't as good. Season one was so compelling. And the other podcast I'm listening to is Deutsche Welle, Warum Nicht, which is a language learning podcast, and it's so boring and awful and boring. And I just listen to it, and I'm like, oh, I'm turning it off. Like, and I just, it's just like I put it on, I think, okay, I'm going to listen. But I am starting my language lessons next week, so 3 days a week I'm going to be reckoning some Deutsch.
Good. So the one I'm listening to, which I am absolutely loving, is a podcast called The Full Catastrophe. And how I found this was, you know, last week we were talking about people that you can type in people that you like and be able to see. So there was a podcast on Mamma Mia called Just Between Us, and it was with Sarah McDonald and Dr. Rebecca Huntley. And it was one of the first Mamma Mia podcasts, and it went on. Well, in the end, Sarah McDonald and Rebecca Huntley stopped working at Mamma Mia and they both went off on their separate ways. So I typed her name in because I wanted to find whether she was doing anything else or where else I could find her. And up popped this podcast called The Full Catastrophe. And the first episode up was Annabelle Crabb, who is, you know, my all-time favourite.
We love.
And what The Full Catastrophe is, because when I started listening, then I realised there was, at that stage, I think 4 little snippets, and now there might be even more, there might be 8. But it was like little 10-minute snippets, and it's stories where people have told the full catastrophe, which is an expression, you know, when everything goes wrong. Yes. Some might say it's a schmozzle, some might say, and it was the full catastrophe. And so Annabelle Crabb's story runs for about 11 minutes, and I urge everyone to go and listen to it because it is hysterically funny. And, you know, Annabelle doesn't talk about her partner, Jeremy, a lot.
No.
But in this one, she really talks about, because she's telling you the story of the birth of their first child, and it is hysterically funny, and it is a full catastrophe. Yes, and it's just fantastic. So I think what is happening, from what I can gather, is Sarah Mack and Rebecca Huntley are organising these sort of get-togethers where people are storytelling. And so there's also Richard Glover is there, and Sarah McDonald does one of her own, Rebecca Huntley does one of her own, and they're just these great little 10-minute snippets of stories. And this sort of storytelling thing is just huge in Australia at the moment. I know it's huge in other parts of the world as well, and I definitely think, Nikki Moffat, we need to have an expat storytelling. Don't you?
Correct.
Yes.
I think we do. And I can think of a good way to tie that in, Kirsty Rice.
I think we should do it with the Big Fat Expat Meetup.
Yes.
Yes. So you're going to put out a little survey this afternoon, aren't you, Nikki, saying...
Yes, I am, Kirsty.
..where should we have the next Big Fat Expat meetup? And what are the options going to be? We had said Jakarta would be one.
Yes, Jakarta, which is your... Listen to these options. Jakarta, which is your first expat posting, and we've talked about first being favourite.
Yes.
In some way.
Yes.
Hong Kong, which is my first expat location. Dubai, which is close to you. And Amsterdam,
yes,
which is close to me. And I know that there's some people been pushing for Amsterdam for a little while.
Yeah. And
so
I think
we'll have to get a group together to vote lots of times.
Yes. So we'll aim for the beginning of February for our next Big Fat Expat Meetup, because we've said that we...
Once a quarter.
And what we're thinking is we'll have an evening where I'll do a reading like I did at the last one, but we'll also record the podcast on a topic of interest. But we'll also be looking for people that want to share their stories. Either we can pop it up on the website, or they can tell it on the evening, depending on what they're comfortable with.
Yes. But, you know, it's a great chance to hear everybody's, and it doesn't have to be a full catastrophe, does it? Does it have to be a full catastrophe?
No, but I was thinking, you'll never believe what happened when I moved to, or just something. I think it's just a fun sort of story, but we can get into that more as we go.
And Kirsty, have you been reading the book?
No.
That we're meant to be.
So I am so into getting through Big Little Lies at the moment. I'm nearly finished. So I will be getting started on the book, The Disobedient Wife, which we're reading for book group. And we'll...
Which we have 2 weeks left to read.
Is it only 2 weeks? Oh, I can do that. I can do that. Did we set a date for when we were going to review?
No, we did. We kind of try and do 4 weeks.
Yes.
So we're kind of, I think we're 3 weeks into our 4 weeks. So we'll say 2 more weeks.
Okay. So we've got 2 more weeks to read The Disobedient Wife.
Yes. And I think we've got an in to the author. So that should be an exciting episode.
Yes, yes, yes. And we will talk to the author of The Disobedient Wife. And I think that's kind of us for this week, isn't it, Nikki?
That's it, wrapping it up from -5 degrees in Hamburg.
Okay, talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.